Years ago, our church decided to open a homeless shelter on Union Street downtown. We had a name for it. We decided to call it Corpus Christi Inn, thinking of the Bethlehem Inn where Jesus, the homeless child, was welcomed. But then on November 24th, 1985, 34 years ago today, a man died named Dmitri Mamzer. And instead, we decided to name the homeless shelter after him, Dmitri House. You probably know that we have three heroes in our collective history as a church. We got Maureen Nielsen. We named Nielsen House after her. Jennifer Dees Vasquez, after whom we named Jennifer House. And Dmitri Mamzer, after whom we named Dmitri House. It's important to keep telling the stories because they're part of our story. So a lot of you don't know, perhaps, the story of Dmitri. So here it is. He was born in Ukraine in 1921, when it was part of the Soviet Union. Adolf Hitler forced him into a work camp in Nazi Germany during World War II. The United States welcomed Dmitri as an immigrant in the 1950s. He was severely addicted to alcohol when he arrived in Rochester. He lived under a bridge that goes over 590. He had two taped together refrigerator boxes that he lived in. Sometimes when it got real cold, he stayed in our basement at church, came to our supper program. Though Dmitri was poor, though he was a pauper, he was very generous. He was seen many times putting quarters into the Salvation Army kettle at Christmas. He collected bottles and bought bread to feed the birds on Park Avenue. He'd give his last crumpled up cigarette to another homeless person. Once he asked a lady on Berkeley Street for some money, and she said, "Oh, Dmitri, I just went shopping. I don't have any money. I'm sorry." "You don't have any money? Any money?" And he reached into his dirty old coat and he pulled out a crumpled up $5 bill. He says, "Here, take this." Madge Kaleri was lifting some heavy pots on her porch on Park Avenue. Dmitri comes along and he says, "I'll help you with that." And then he brought some trash cans in the back and she offered to help, but he said, "No, I don't need any money." Later, she saw him rummaging through a dumpster at a grocery store. Later that night, it was at dark, and he was crossing East Avenue. He was drunk, and right in front of Asbury Methodist Church, and he was hit by a car. I gave him the last rites in the hospital, and I whispered in his ear, "Dmitri, you don't have to stay out in the cold anymore. You don't have to live under a bridge. Just go home. Just go home." And 34 years ago today, November 24th, he went home. 150 people came to his funeral. We sent him out like an angel, even though he lived as a pauper. He was buried at Riverside Cemetery, and since he had no money to buy a grave, they placed him in an unused plot of a wealthy family of Rochester. So Dmitri is now sitting on the top, on the hill with these big pillars, all the engraved markings, overlooking the pond. God lifts up the poor and sets them down with the rulers of the people. So Dmitri is like the good thief who dies next to Jesus. Like Dmitri, the good thief is at the bottom of the social ladder. And yet, he's the hero of the story. We've been reading Luke's gospel all year. This is the last one today. And Spiritus Christi is based on Luke's gospel. If you've never read Luke's gospel, read it. It's wonderful. A major theme in this gospel is this. The people at the bottom are the heroes. The social order is reversed. It's kind of like the impeachment hearings this week. Who are the heroes in this story? Not the powerful, conniving people at the top, but the lowly government workers that nobody's ever heard of. Trying to be loyal, trying to speak the truth, trying to act for the common good. In Luke, unlikely people are the heroes. So the prodigal son, he was the hero, not because he was perfect, far from it, but because he was humble and he needed his father's forgiveness. The tax collector in the temple, he's the hero, not because he's perfect, but because he was humble, he needed God's forgiveness. And in this story, the good thief is the hero, not because he's perfect. He's a criminal. But he was humble, and he needed what Jesus had to offer. The good thief in this very short passage does two things. He defends Jesus, and he affirms Jesus' mission to build an alternative kingdom. He defends Jesus, and he affirms his mission to build an alternative kingdom. So first, he defends him. Did you ever notice that in the New Testament, hardly anybody ever defends Jesus? He defends everybody else. Who defends Jesus? Just in this story, it says the rulers sneer at Jesus. The soldiers jeer at him. The other thief mocks him. If you're the Christ, then save us. Get us down from here. Do a miracle to prove that you're the chosen one. But Jesus refuses to engage in acts of power and grandiosity. He refused to come down because he wanted to stay in solidarity with people who suffer. So why didn't he come down from the cross? Does God know what it's like to have a migraine headache? Look at the crown of thorns. Does God know what it's like to be in a car accident? Look at Jesus' mangled body. Does God know what it's like to be betrayed by a good friend? Look at Judas. He refused to come down from the cross because he wanted to show us he knows what we're going through. He was in solidarity with us. While he was doing that, he was being ridiculed. They were jeering and sneering at him. But it wasn't just at the cross that he was ridiculed. He encountered mockery his entire career. People called him a glutton, a drunk, a consorter of tax collectors, a sinner, a liar, a misleader of people, and the worst, the prince of demons. And who called him these things? The religious leaders. How would you like it if your religious leaders called you the prince of demons? Have you ever been ridiculed in public? Probably a lot of you have. I remember I gave a weekend retreat for a bunch of nuns in a mother house in Latham, New York. I was there from Friday to Sunday, and at the end, we had a question and answer period, and I said, does anybody have any questions? And this old nun, in her complete regalia, she took the microphone and she said, yes, I have a question. How did we get so unlucky as to have Father Callan spend the weekend with us? So, thank you, sister. In 1998, when everything blew up, I was called a cult leader, a renegade, a rebel, an apostate, a spoiled brat who wants his own way. It was good for my humility. Reverend Mary Rammerman was called a witch, an imposter, a fraud, a fake priest. Reverend Myra has often been called an angry black woman. But these things are pretty minor, what we're called, compared to what Jesus was called. And who was there to defend Jesus? You can count on one hand the people that defended Jesus. Think about it. Who defended Jesus? Well, there is the man born blind. When Jesus healed him, he was criticized for healing on the Sabbath, and the healed man said, hey, if this person were not from God, he couldn't do a miracle like this. So he stood up to the religious leaders. Who's somebody else that defended Jesus? The wife of Pontius Pilate. Remember that story? Jesus is on trial before Pilate. His wife sends Pilate a note saying, don't interfere with this holy man. Last night I had a terrible dream about him. She called Jesus a holy man. She stood up to the most powerful person in Palestine. Another person who defends Jesus is the man today, the good thief. And what does he say? We've been condemned justly because we're criminals, but this man has done nothing wrong. This man has done nothing wrong. He defends Jesus. Secondly, the good thief affirms Jesus' mission to establish an alternative kingdom called the kingdom of God. Jesus spent his whole life trying to build an alternative to the cruel, unjust Roman Empire. To give you an idea of what the Roman Empire was like, we all know ISIS. The Roman Empire was like ISIS. They beheaded people, they crucified people left and right. It was a reign of terror. And Jesus decided to create an alternative kingdom, which he called the kingdom of God instead of the kingdom of Caesar. It's a kingdom where the nobodies were somebodies. He lifted up the nobodies and he challenged the people on the top. He empowered women in a patriarchal society. He advocated for lepers and people with disabilities in a society that ostracized them. He held a nonviolent peace parade on Palm Sunday to counter Roman militarism. He was shaking up the social order, turning things upside down. He was a threat to the Roman Empire, and that's why they killed him. The Jews didn't kill him. The Roman Empire killed him. Pilate even mocked him by putting up a sign above his head. "This is the King of the Jews." So Pilate is saying, "So this is your alternative kingdom, huh? Look at what a failure you are. You're the king? Look at you." So in this crucifixion scene, everybody is mocking him about his kingdom. Pilate, the religious leaders, the soldiers, one of the thieves. The good thief is the only one to validate his kingdom. And this is what he says. "Remember me, Jesus, in your kingdom." He uses the word kingdom. "Remember me in this kingdom of love and forgiveness and justice when it comes about, because I want to be part of it." That must have been so comforting to Jesus. Mike Boucher, you told a story, I don't know if you remember this, a long time ago, about a family who went out to dinner at a diner for lunch. Waitress comes over to take the order. An 8-year-old kid says, "I'll have a hot dog." And the mother immediately says, "No, he'll have a hamburger and french fries." She continues to take the orders around the table. She comes back to the kid and says, "Would you like ketchup on that hot dog?" There was an awkward silence. And the kid says, "At least somebody thinks I'm real." Jesus felt validated by this thief. Years ago, when we were fired from our jobs and we started this church, this controversial church, some of us went out to Albion, to Orleans prison, and we gave a retreat day for the inmates at this prison. At the end of the retreat day, an inmate called Maurice, he looked at me and he said, "Father Jim, don't ever stop this prison ministry, and don't ever close down Spiritus Christi Church, because people will die." I must not have looked too convinced, because Maurice moved his chair a little closer to me and he says, "Look at Father Jim, do you hear me? People will die. You know why? Because this group saves lives. It's saved my life. It saved his life, his life, his life. So don't ever close down the church." Right at this time, people in Rochester were disapproving of our church. They said we were ruining the Catholic Church, we were a scandal, we're all going to hell. But in the midst of all this controversy, a lowly prisoner named Maurice gave us the only validation that mattered. Don't close down the church. We now had our letter of recommendation from the poor. It was a command to continue the work. Most of you know the story of King Arthur and Camelot. In the Middle Ages, the knights were fighting. There was looting, there was chaos, there was violence. But King Arthur builds an ideal kingdom, an alternative kingdom. He brings the knights together around a round table. He taught everybody's equal, nobody's superior to anybody else. He taught them to share what they had with the poor so everybody has enough. It was a utopian vision, just like Jesus' kingdom of God dream. But in the midst of building this dream, guess what happens? Queen Guinevere, his beloved wife, and his most trusted knight, Sir Lancelot, fall in love. The negative forces use this affair to splinter the kingdom, and Camelot fell. This beautiful kingdom fell. In the last scene, Arthur says to Lancelot, whom he continued to love, "Has it all been in vain? Has this whole dream been in vain?" And just then, a little boy tugs at the king's robes. He knows all the stories. He knows the story of the round table. He knows all the details. And Arthur says to Lancelot, as long as there are young people like this who know the stories and can tell them, then Camelot will not have been in vain. And then Arthur sings the song, ask every person if they've heard the story, and tell it strong and clear if they have not, that once there was a fleeting wisp of glory called Camelot. Like King Arthur, Jesus was comforted and affirmed by a person of low status. Jesus was surrounded by people that hated him. He was surrounded by people that mocked him and wanted to kill his dream. But in the midst of all that, there was one person who got it. One person who understood what Jesus was all about. Like Dimitri and like Maurice, the inmate, this person was considered a nobody. But this nobody told Jesus, in the worst moment of Jesus' life, I believe in your kingdom. I believe in your kingdom of forgiveness and love and equality. I want to be part of it. Remember me in this kingdom. And Jesus said, you're already in it. Today, you will be with me in paradise.